Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Seller Performance Solutions, our weekly podcast. I'm Chris McCabe here of e-commerce. Chris with Leah McHugh. How are you doing today, Leah?
Good, thanks. How are you, Chris?
Good. You're about 4 weeks away from Prosper Show and your talk on the, I believe it's called the Compliance Lightning Round.
Amazon Compliance Lightning
Round. Amazon Compliance, yes. Not compliance in general.
No.
All things Amazon here at Seller Performance Solutions. Can you just give a quick rundown on your talk and what your focus will be?
Yeah, so I am talking about knowing your Amazon policies. So particularly in light of Amazon's zero tolerance policy on many of their policies, I am there to make sure that sellers know these policies so they don't get their account permanently deactivated. And then what to do if they do get suspended.
Of course, there's always the if you are suspended because you don't prevent, heed any advice to prevent the suspension.
Or also, you know, Amazon makes mistakes. So it can happen even if you've done nothing wrong.
Of course. Well, when Amazon makes the mistakes, hopefully they're easy to prove.
Well, so that's kind of what's interesting with the compliance side of things for the full account suspensions is that sellers have a lot of trouble when Amazon incorrectly shuts down their account for restricted products. So it's something that I work on a lot and get reinstated a lot. But in my experience, it's something that sellers, when they try to do it themselves, have a lot of trouble doing. So I'm going to be talking about that. What if Amazon incorrectly shuts down your account, even though you aren't selling restricted products or you aren't violating their policies?
You mean they have trouble on the diagnostic side? In terms of what's going on, why did it happen?
No, that part's relatively easy. Amazon usually gives them the specific product that caused the restriction and caused the account shutdown.
Yeah.
But they have trouble proving that they didn't list a restricted product and getting their account reinstated.
Yeah. And I'm sure, so for those of you less familiar with the Prosper Show, every year in Las Vegas, Leah and I used to do workshops on policy enforcement, appeal strategy, to different things. Those were special treats because we got to talk nonstop for 3 hours.
Yeah, my vocal cords are very happy that I'm not doing a three-hour talk.
We appreciate that they had us do it in the past, but we also appreciate that we don't have to talk. 1 year, the intermission was skipped.
Yeah, and then the year that I stupidly wore high heels, that was a rough one.
I just remember the one time where it became Q&A, whatever the break was in the middle to rest our voices became people lined up asking questions, and then we went right back into the slides and presentation. So those were the old days. This is a 45-minute session, correct?
I think the entire compliance lightning rounds are 50 minutes.
Okay. So you're going to give your presentation on compliance, Amazon compliance, and then take questions. So if you don't have a ticket yet to the Prosper Show, I'm pretty sure they're still available March 25th to 27th, and you are on the 27th.
Correct? Yep, correct.
Yeah, right, in Las Vegas. So what types of questions are you anticipating other than I botched this and I need help with an appeal? Let's say for the moment, it's not a restricted product suspension. Somebody's just maybe afraid that they haven't kept their eye on the ball and they might be unprotected on some part of their operations. So what types of questions do you typically get in email form or on the phone that you would get in person at Prosper?
One I get constantly is that they've submitted all of the information Amazon's requested and they're just stuck in this loop of Amazon asking them for the same information that they've already submitted, and how do they get themselves out of that loop?
But wouldn't they be worried in a lot of cases that the reason they're getting rejected is because the information they supplied is not adequate?
And sometimes that is the case, but other times they've supplied exactly what Amazon has asked for, and they just get stuck in this loop of being asked for the same information that they've already provided over and over and over again.
But what's an example of something that they would have just supplied an out-of-date compliance document or an incomplete document or...
If it's not by an accredited body, that's another one. It depends on the issue. Not every compliance requirement is the same for every product. So it is quite specific to a product, which is sort of one of the difficult parts when I do these talks, is that people tend to ask very specific questions because compliance is very specific to specific products.
So if somebody doesn't have testing from the appropriate lab that Amazon considers acceptable, you just have to start the whole process over? What do they do at that stage? Or are they just stuck in the loop of appeals and they don't have an ability to start over?
For the types of compliance where Amazon is requesting it from a specific lab, they need to get the testing from that specific lab. That is Amazon's policy for certain kinds of supplements, that they only accept results from three specific laboratories. And if you don't have testing from those three labs, then you need to get new testing from one of those three labs.
Is this where people are getting caught trying to manipulate or edit or alter documents because they don't want to start the process over? Is that why we keep hearing that documents are being rejected for being fabricated?
No, I think that's why Amazon has started the requirement of only accepting testing from specific labs, because in the past, people were manipulating documents or using perhaps less reputable labs who would allow them to change the result. I think that's why we are now seeing that they will only accept results from very specific labs for certain products, is because in the past, some sellers were manipulating documents.
And how did they even wind up with those labs? They were just cheaper? Typically, from your conversations with them, how did they end up working with a lab that had no real value?
Oh, the labs were accredited. I mean, okay. So it's a combination of somebody in the lab doing something that they weren't supposed to, or the seller doing something that they weren't supposed to with the results that they were given from the lab, combination of the two.
I haven't really heard that many cases of people getting reinstated when their accounts shut down for a faking document.
So I've worked on a case where we were able to prove that the seller didn't fake the documents, that somebody else in the supply chain had faked the documents and that they had accepted them in good faith. We were able to provide all of that evidence to Amazon and they were able to get their account reinstated.
Because somebody else did it and there was a good paper trail.
Yeah. So they had accepted it in good faith. They had accepted it from a reputable person in the supply chain. It wasn't even directly to them. It was the person before them in the supply chain that had been given the false documents from somebody else. And so in that case, we were able to get them reinstated because, yes, they should have checked the lab results themselves. But in that case, they had legitimately accepted them in good faith. And we were able to prove that to Amazon.
Okay. In terms of sellers dealing with the compliance teams without expert assistance, I mean, is that even feasible? Do they just bang their heads up against the wall and it takes 10 times longer than it would if you weren't used to dealing with those teams every day? I mean, what's the typical outcome when
it's one of those things that maybe they'll get lucky? Okay. Maybe they get somebody good that reviews their case and it goes through. But more often than not, it's a combination, right? So sometimes it's the seller isn't providing the correct information, or maybe they aren't providing it in the correct format, or it's just being sent to a team who isn't incentivized to properly review it, but are incentivized to quickly resolve cases. So it's a combination of the two. So you can get lucky. It's the same with any Amazon team. Sometimes you get it in front of the right person first try and relatively easy. And then other times you just get stuck in this loop of a process until you do something to break out of it. And that's usually when they need to hire somebody like us to break them out of that loop.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming they all more or less tried the same things before they're emailing with you. Seller support cases, calls to account health.
It is pretty evenly split of the cases that I get, where half of them, it's being rejected because they aren't submitting the right information, and half of them are being rejected because it's just not being reviewed properly. It is pretty evenly split as far as I see. So sometimes due to no fault of the seller, it just isn't being properly reviewed. But then also we do get half of our cases where they just aren't submitting the right information, or they're not submitting it in the right format.
And then in terms of, I don't know how much time you've had on LinkedIn to see what people are posting or YouTube videos, or I just imagine there's lots of shoddy, ill-conceived advice out there about how to deal with compliance teams. Are people just recommending that they deal with it like it's the same team as anyone else at Amazon? Or is it generic advice? Do people give specific advice that's the opposite of what sellers should do? What's been your experience just kind of perusing what's out there, what's posted publicly by agencies or marketers or sellers themselves?
So in general, people don't tend to talk about this as much as they do, say, it's the seller performance team. And I think part of that is because it is so specific to specific products in specific countries. What I see talked about is people not understanding the regulations. So what I get a lot of and what I see talked about a lot of is, my product was flagged as a pesticide and my product is not a chemical pesticide. which is pretty common misconception that the only kind of pesticide is a chemical pesticide. Pesticides in the United States are anything that claims to kill pests. So a lot of times the product is actually legally considered a pesticide because of the claims that they are making on the product, but they think that it is not a pesticide because it is not a chemical. So those sort of things are what I tend to see talked about most often online, or products that are supplements being flagged as drugs. And the seller is adamant that it's not a drug, but they are making drug claims on their supplement, which then makes it an unregistered drug in the FDA's eyes.
I mean, as time goes on, I hear more random comments about, I saw this thing on Reddit for a case like mine. I mean, everyone always wants to compare their case to something that's publicly posted.
It just happens a little bit less for the compliance side than it does for seller performance, because it is very product specific and country specific.
But that's what I mean. Don't people say, here's the message, it says restricted products, and they start comparing their restricted product to other types of restricted products that don't have anything to do with what they sell? Isn't that the fundamental mistake people are making? Like, the message, the generic message, says something similar, and so they just post, I want to know how to resolve a restricted product.
The biggest mistake I see is sellers giving examples of other products being sold on Amazon that's the same as theirs. That doesn't prove that your product isn't a restricted product. It doesn't prove that the claims you're making are allowed. All it proves is that lots of people are doing the wrong thing on Amazon's marketplace, and they're not that great at enforcing it across the board. That's the biggest thing that I see being done incorrectly, is showing that example of other sellers doing the same thing as you.
I don't know if that's ever going away until Amazon enforces policies across the board consistent. I think people are going to keep saying, why am I being punished? Look at all these other people doing the same exact thing.
Yeah, it doesn't help your case. If anything, it hurts your case.
But it also doesn't motivate Amazon.
I think part of it's a cathartic thing. Well, if they're allowed to do it, why aren't I? I think it's something that probably feels good to submit from the seller, but it doesn't help your case at all. And they certainly like talking to me about the other listings that they see doing the same thing that they're doing. And I like to tell them that in about 3 clicks, I can find a policy violation when I go to Amazon.com. So unfortunately, you can't go off of what you see.
And you can find Amazon breaking its own listing policies. That's the best.
Yeah, that's my favorite example to use when I give these talks, actually, because it tends to rile up the audience when I use Amazon as an example of what not to do.
All right. On that note, we look forward to seeing you and hearing from you on this topic. In Las Vegas, March 27th, the conference Prosper Show starts on the 25th. We are going to have a booth there, so come on by. This is not the last you will hear about the Prosper Show for 2025. So thanks, Leah, for telling us more about your talk, and I will see you all again soon.